Well, howdy y'all. Welcome to episode number 65 of Once Upon a Time in Texas. I am your host, Michael Mitchell, and first off, I want to apologize. I completely missed doing episode 65 last week. It's been interesting. I've had a few folks reach out and be like, "Hey, is everything okay? You didn't post a podcast." And I was like, "Crap." Springtime is a busy time. And so I'm going to tell y'all a little bit about what was going on this last week, because I do not record these way out. Usually I record these the Monday or Tuesday before I release them on Wednesday, just because I want it to be real. You know, I want it to be kind of up to date, I guess. So when I'm talking about stuff, it's not, you know, weeks ago. It's happening now. And so here's what last week looked like for me. First off, it started off with the weekend. We went down to what we called the Order of the Arrow Conclave, which Order of the Arrow is part of the Boy Scouts of America. It's the Honored Camper Society. And this was the first time my entire family has been able to go. And it was at Camp Constantine down at Possum Kingdom Lake. And we had torrential downpour. Like, yeah, tons. I can't even describe it. We had one of our leaders that was with us. Her in-laws owned a lake house just actually right across the bay. From where we were, I mean, we could see it from camp, and they got a little over 2.5 inches. And so about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, my wife said, "Hey, I kind of want to go back to our camp and check out our tents just to kind of see how things are." And I don't know what happened with our tent, but we pretty much needed a lifeguard, for us to go in and retrieve our stuff. We've got this great tent. It's one of those Magellan Swift Rise from Academy. My wife and I figured it up the other day. It's one of those big two-room cabin tents. It's heavy, but it's a great tent for some of the stuff that we do. And I can't remember if we figured it up. It's either 17 or 19 total weeks that we've spent in it. I mean, we've taken it to summer camp several times when we were working as program director and nature center director at Camp Simpson up outside of Tishomingo, Oklahoma. Anyway, we have spent an enormous amount of time in this tent, and it has never leaked a drop. And so I'm not really sure what happened, but it was basically raining as much inside the tent as outside. And so we ended up, you know, having to get our gear out and kind of, you know, reconfigure things. And thank God the rain ended, but my gosh, it was terrible. And to be honest, one of the other leaders that was with us, the one that's whose in-laws owned the lake house, we ended up going and staying at the lake house. We had some other leaders with us, and so they stayed with our group. But we ended up going over there, and I don't know if it's just because our tent was kind of more out in the open or what, but it was wild. So anyway, I go straight from there. We come home on Sunday. I help set up all of our wet gear to dry out. And on Monday morning, I go pick up my teammates with Victory Home Loans here in town. And we fly out to Pontiac, Michigan for training Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Now, this was pretty cool because, like I've told you guys, Victory Home Loans, we're in 16 states now. We just added New Mexico. And this is the first time I've been able to go with a large part of the group. And so we had mostly folks from Oregon and then us from Texas there. And it was just great meeting everybody face-to-face, you know, all of our teammates. And I think next time we go, it's going to be even bigger, and we're getting people in from, you know, the other states to come in as well. And so that was great. They all decided to stay on until Thursday and fly out Thursday. I decided to fly back Wednesday night. And so plane was a little delayed. Then it took a while for the shuttle to pick me up. And then I couldn't get out of the damn parking lot where my truck was parked. The lady had to come out and like manually open the gate and everything. It was a real pain in the ass. And so I ended up not getting home until like 2 a.m. Thursday morning. Slept until about 6:30. And then got up, went out to my folks' place, got a trailer, picked up a couple of UTVs, and then headed out south to Jacksboro to help my science teacher from high school, who's now retired and helps do a big rocket launch for a student program called Systems Go. And so I get down there, I help do some setup, I come home, and I'm just dragging hiney, I guess. And Friday, I get up, and I am the chair of my Rotary Club Sporting Clays. And so get up, have some stuff to do on that on Friday. And then, of course, we run the Sporting Clay shoot on Saturday, which was amazing because we are right next to Shepherd Air Force Base. That was having their first big air show since, I think, 2019 or 18. COVID threw it off and everything. Anyway, it was great. The planes were coming right over the top of us. We had the best seat in town. And then, of course, Sunday, we got asked as our scout troop to go out and help hand things out and kind of help man the gate. Well, security forces were manning the gate. But as people were coming in, we're helping give directions and, you know, bathrooms, and here's comic books for the kids about the Guardians of Freedom there at Shepherd Air Force Base. Anyway, long story short, I just missed it, man. So for those of y'all that have responded to check on me, thank you. And I'll just tell y'all, I'm sorry that I missed it. But let's go ahead and get into this week's podcast and just move on. So have you ever heard the name of an organization, usually a nonprofit organization or something, and thought about how it started and what it represents and what they do? And, you know, here are 10 organizations based in Texas that you might have heard of, but maybe not, because there's a few on here that I hadn't heard of. So before we take a look at these interesting organizations, I want to thank our sponsors, Me and Victory Home Loans. I know there are tons of people moving in the United States, and although interest rates are higher than normal, you know, people are still buying houses. People still need a place to live. And so I am licensed in Texas and Oklahoma, but I have teammates in 14 other states, 16 total, to help them out. So if you know someone moving, have them give me a shout. Send them over to themichaelmitchell.com, themichaelmitchell.com. And if I can't help them, I can usually point them in the direction of someone who can. So remember, when you work with me and Victory Home Loans, we sell dreams, not mortgages. So there you go. So where did this week's idea come from? So I told y'all I went down to the rocket shoot thing, and I'm coming back through Jacksboro, Texas. And there on the side of the road is the 4-H Museum. It wasn't open, of course, and I was in a little bit of a hurry to get back. But that got me thinking about 4-H and other organizations and where they started and which ones started in Texas. And I have been told recently that 4-H started in Jacksboro, Texas. Very matter-of-factly, and it turns out it kind of didn't, but I guess 4-H in Texas started there. But 4-H is kind of a big conglomerate, I guess, and we're going to get into that. But, you know, as usual, I end up going down a rabbit hole, and, well, here we are. So these are 10 organizations here in Texas. And again, like I said, you might have heard of them and might not have. So let's talk about 4-H. So although 4-H did not start here in Texas, you'd have to go look up their history. It was kind of a group, kind of like the Boy Scouts. There were people doing stuff similar to Boy Scouts, and then Boy Scouts kind of pulled it all together and made a program out of it. That's kind of what 4-H did nationally. And so it didn't start here in Texas, but we were pretty early adopters. And so, I did a little research, and here's what I found. So the first county extension agent in Texas was appointed in 1906, 8 years before the organization of the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. 2 years later, TM Tom Marks, the county agricultural agent, organized the first Boys Corn Club in Jack County. And 4-H operates under clubs. So, like, my kids are actually involved in the 4-H shooting club here in town. So, anyway, this guy found that he was more successful teaching new production technology to youth as opposed to adults. Y'all understand what I'm saying there? He found it was easier to teach kids than adults. I know this is just unheard of. I'm sure many of you adults that are listening to this are shocked and amazed that it's easier to teach kids new stuff than adults. So within a matter of years, they ended up having pig clubs, beef calf clubs. They had a girls tomato club. Those were all initiated, and the stage was set for the rapid expansion of educational programs directed to rural youth. And that's really how 4-H started, was these hands-on educational programs specific for rural youth. And now they've changed some to where they want to teach agricultural aspects to all youth, not just rural youth. And so, anyway, within a span of about 91 years, 4-H enrollment in Texas has grown from the original 25 Corn Club members in Jack County in 1908 to have over a million youth in 2000. And I think they've even grown since then. And so, and then, of course, like I said, Texas, the Texas 4-H Museum is located in Jacksboro, Jack County, Texas, which is considered the birthplace of 4-H in Texas, not the nation. So that's important to know. So the next I had not heard about, this is the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, Texas. It's what it's called. It's located in Brownsville, and the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, also known as the Cherokee Nation of Sequoia of Mexico, Texas, and the USA Reservation and Church, that's a big long word, is an organization of individuals who claim descent from the Cherokee tribe who migrated to Mexico during the 19th century. They are an unrecognized tribe with a presence in Zaragoza, Coahuila, Mexico. And according to what I found, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico is recognized by the state of Coahuila, but it's not a recognized tribe of Texas and or the United States. So, and actually I found there's like four or five of these based here in Texas. So it's kind of interesting. I didn't put them all in here, but if you get a chance, look it up. It's kind of cool. Number three is another organization, and it's called Camp Fern, F-E-R-N. And so Camp Fern, this is what I found, is a summer camp for boys and girls located in rural Harrison County outside of Marshall, Texas. It was founded in 1934 and operates on the basis of Christian principles with respect for all faiths. And they did point that out pretty heavily in what I was looking at. So they had facilitated recreational activities for children on the shores of Fern Lake since 1931. Vernon and Maggie Hilliard officially founded Camp Fern in 1934 with the addition of residential cabins built from logs sourced from the surrounding area. They did a five-week all-girls session, and then it was followed by a five-week all-boys session. Probably a good idea, because if they were using the same bathrooms, boys have a tendency of peeing everywhere, so at least it was probably clean for the girls. So the original activities offered included English horseback riding, swimming, canoeing, riflery, archery, arts and crafts, and educational programs on the natural ecosystems of the Piney Woods of East Texas, and all of those still remain at the camp. Through the years, more things have been added, including water skiing, tennis, boxing, fencing, drama, and a ropes course. And additionally, Camp Fern seeks to provide unique cultural experiences, such as the 2015 visit from the Bolshoi Ballet from Moscow, Russia. Since the beginning, a focal point of camp life at Camp Fern has been tribal competition, in which all campers join one of two tribes. They're called Bena or Owosso at girls camp and Caddo and Tejas at boys camp. They're pitted against each other in a variety of contests throughout the session. On the last night of camp, the result of the session-long competition is announced by revealing that year's feather, which is painted in the winning tribe's color and on a wooden plaque that resembles a Native American headdress. So in 1985, Camp Fern reduced the length of the all-girls and all-boys sessions to 4 weeks and added a two-week co-ed session for younger children. However, it's been discontinued since then. In 2008, the remake of Friday the 13th was partially filmed at Camp Fern. And then on May 9th, 2022, Camp Fern's license to operate expired, which led to their cancellation of the entire 22 season. And later that year, 2022, it was announced that Camp Fern Legacy, a nonprofit entity led by a board of directors, would take over operation of Camp Fern beginning in the summer of 2023 season. It did list some famous people that were actually alumni of the camp, and I thought that was kind of cool. So, number four was kind of interesting. It's called the Dead Runner Society, based in Austin, Texas. So the Dead Runner Society, or DRS for short, is a worldwide online running club. DRS is notable for its unusual role in the development of both the internet and the sport of running. It was founded by a guy named Chris Kahn in 1991 as an electronic mailing list. DRS predates widespread use of the World Wide Web. It is an early example of a virtual community formed around a non-professional topic. Many early DRS members were computer professionals, librarians, academics, and researchers. Membership broadened with the growing use of email in the mid-90s, and annual world conferences have been held since 1993. So DRS members are known as DEADs. Online discussion includes everything from meditation to marathon training and even topics only marginally related to running. DEADs also meet regularly at races. DEADs range from beginning runners to elite athletes. One DEAD even holds the world record for the 1 mile run for women age 70 and older. Other DEADs are coaches, race directors, writers and editors of running magazines, and developers of running-related software. DEADs say the civilized level of discourse and strong sense of community sets DRS apart from other mailing lists and groups. They even have their own lingo, such as a Clydesdale, which is a heavy runner, so I don't know if heavy just means they're like big muscular or if they're like chunky people. Penguin, this would be me, is a slow runner. An encounter is a face-to-face meeting of dead runners. And Goomies, which is a post-run snack or drink. Thought that was kind of interesting. Number five, the Hemispherectomy Foundation in Aledo, Texas. Now, this is nowhere near as dirty as it sounds. The Hemispherectomy. That sounds really bad, but this foundation was formed as a nonprofit organization founded to provide a support structure for children and their families of children who have had or are preparing to have a hemispherectomy brain surgery. So, you know, hemisphere, you've got the right and left brain. That's why you have left and right brain people. So, yeah, I just thought the name sounded really interesting. So the foundation also provides scholarships for college, trade schools, and summer camps, as well as financial assistance and support as needed, and is based in Aledo, Texas. I thought that was kind of cool, mostly because of the name, but, I mean, you know, kids having any kind of surgery is scary. Brain surgery, that's a big deal. Number six is called Interpride. Interpride. Interpride was incorporated as a nonprofit organization in Texas in the 1980s. The organization was originally known as the National Association of Lesbian and Gay Pride Coordinators, before changing the name to the International Association of Lesbian and Gay Pride Coordinators in 1985. The International Association of Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Coordinators, which they changed in, you know, that was at a meeting in West Hollywood, California in that year. And then eventually they changed to Interpride in the late 1990s. And after a little reading, and I'm not going to get into a huge bit of the history because they've got a huge, interesting history. So it appears that the Pride idea, which goes along with the gay and lesbian pride stuff, didn't come out of Texas necessarily, but Interpride is more of kind of an umbrella organization that brings together those pride organizers and organizations from around the world. So apparently it's kind of like I was talking about, like 4-H and even the Boy Scouts earlier, that you have a bunch of people out there doing similar type stuff, and then you get an organization that kind of brings it all together. And that's what Interpride did for all these pride organizations. So I thought that was interesting. Number seven, the Moody Foundation of Galveston, Texas. So the Moody Foundation is a charitable foundation incorporated in Texas and based on the island city of Galveston. It was chartered in 1942 by William Lewis Moody Jr. and his wife, Libby Rice Shern Moody. And it says the organization, or the foundation, foundation, is to benefit in perpetuity present and future generations of Texas. How cool is that? The foundation mostly focuses the majority of its funding on programs involving education, social services, children's needs, and community development. A little more digging says that for more than 75 years, the Moody Foundation has supported projects and programs that better communities in the state of Texas. Since then, the foundation has awarded over $1.5 billion, with a B, dollars, and over 4,000 grants to organizations across the state that have educated, healed, nurtured, and inspired generations of Texas. Grants are made through its Galveston, Texas headquarters and through a field office located in Dallas. In terms of assets, it is one of the largest foundations in Texas and among the top 100 largest charitable foundations in the United States. I have seen lots of stuff over the years about the Moody Foundation. Never really knew what they did, where they came from, but they sponsored some cool stuff, you know, some cool places that I've been to. And so that was kind of cool to find that out. Number eight, it's called Purple Songs Can Fly in Houston. So Purple Songs Can Fly is a nonprofit organization that sponsors a music program at the Texas Children's Cancer Center in Houston. It allows patients at the hospital to compose and record songs in a real music studio. The program was founded in March 2006 by Anita Cruz, a songwriter and pianist. The Love Street Light Circus donated $10,000 to build a studio at the hospital. And this is the cool part. I love getting into numbers. By December 2021, patients have recorded over 2,800 songs, and in 2023, the 3,000th song was recorded and released. How cool is that? And there was a lot of information in there about how music can be therapeutic, which, I mean, I know a lot of you guys out there would probably agree. I mean, we listen to different kind of songs to calm down or to get amped up or whatever. And so I just thought that was a really cool thing, especially at the Texas Children's Cancer Center. Talk about being in the thick of it, you know, if you're a kid and have cancer, it kind of defines your life, and what a cool opportunity to go do something else and something different. Number 9, the Warrior Dog Foundation in Cooper, Texas. It provides care and comfort to dogs that have ended their service supporting American soldiers. Its main goal is to give the dogs a place to live out their golden years, having fun on a ranch with dignity and respect. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I've never heard of that before. So the War Dog Foundation, Cooper, Texas. And number 10, I suspect everybody has heard about this, and I think I knew they were in Texas, but I don't know, really didn't pay much attention to it. Susan G. Komen for The Cure in Dallas, Texas. So Susan G. Komen, formerly known as Susan G. Komen for The Cure, and originally as the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation, or often referred to as just the Komen Foundation. As you guys know, it is a breast cancer research organization in the United States. The foundation's namesake, Susan Goodman Komen, died of breast cancer in 1980 at the age of 36 years old. I did not know that. Komen's younger sister, Nancy Brinker, has stated that she believed Susan's outcome might have been better had she known more about cancer and its treatment. And so Nancy founded the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation in 1982, and it's based out of Dallas, Texas. So there you go. What do y'all think? There are 10 nonprofit organizations or foundations based right here in Texas. Some of them I know you guys have heard of. Some of them you didn't. But let me know, what other kind of weird or off-the-wall, interesting Texas history would you like to hear about? Really need you guys to reach out, because after 65 episodes, I'm kind of coming up a little short. I still find things randomly, but yeah, I still need some help. So give me those ideas. I want to thank our sponsors again. That's me and Victory Home Loans. Keep in mind, if you know anybody looking to buy a home, send them my way. Please help me out. That's what keeps the bills paid, the lights on, and the microphone recording, except for last week, apparently. Send them over my way, themichaelmitchell.com, themichaelmitchell.com. I also have a blog on there. I talk about mortgage stuff on there. Got some videos, of course. If you know anybody that wants to follow my podcast, they can find all the links to my podcast through themichaelmitchell.com. Anyway, I love making people laugh and smile and help get into homes of their own. So anyway, thank you all for tuning in to Once Upon a Time in Texas, episode number 65. That's going to wrap up this week. And as always, remember, the stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. Y'all have a great week.